Sturgeon's Law number 78, Radiohead, webcomics, Final Fantasy, email, and Podsafe music.
90% of everything.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, hang up and then dial your operator.
Is crud.
You're listening to Sturgeon's Law, the podcast that keeps you up to date on the 10% of everything that isn't crud. Check out the show notes at www.sturgeonslaw.com, and you can find the music used in this show at the Podsafe Music Network and Magnatune.com. Now here's your host, Random.
Thanks again to announcer Brad Example. Well, folks, I have a few things for you this time out that you may know about some of, you may know about all of, but one of the things I want to be free to do is talk about things that interest me, whether they're new, old, common knowledge, or pretty obscure. So anyway, we'll give it a shot right after this.
Tired of feeling wired? If you're stuck at one machine trying to shake loose some podcasts, you're missing most of the fun. With PodcastReady.com, you can get to your subscriptions anywhere you can run a web browser. Then download the MyPodder software and download your new shows anywhere you can plug in your portable player. Exchange favorite shows and favorite episodes with your friends and never complain about having nothing to listen to or watch again. PodcastReady.com. Cooler than an iPhone and $600 cheaper.
I just couldn't let the news about Radiohead slide. Now, I don't know that I'm a huge Radiohead fan. I admit that I've gotten old enough that I can't really always put songs to band names anymore. Now, if you want to ask me about Smadey's New Wave, I am there for you. But, okay, so I couldn't tell you what I think about Radiohead off the top of my head, so to speak. However, I will tell you what I think about the way they're selling their latest album. That album is In Rainbows, and they're selling it themselves via a website. That's right, they're not going the normal, let's face it, RIAA route. Instead, you're buying it, well, directly from them for some version of directly, but the important part is that the money is going to them, and that they're making it worth your while as well. Now, there's two choices. The download version, or what you might call the physical version. The download version is one CD's worth of tracks, and you get to name your price. Now, I have to admit that I couldn't immediately find, and maybe I just looked straight past it, details about the quality and so on. Nevertheless, for what it is that you get, you name your price. They do say there is some processing fee, and that details of that fee were not clear up front. That's the interesting Magnatune approach that has worked very well for Magnatune, and they have found that they don't get the bottom price for that. So we'll see how that goes for Radiohead. Now, if you buy the physical version, you get that CD, physically, of course, plus another CD of songs. You also get them all on vinyl, which is very interesting, as well as accompanying books, a hardback cover, a slipcase, and the whole thing. Now, this set is pretty pricey. I seem to recall it being something like maybe £40, so, you know, around $80. Nevertheless, for such a collector's set, it's not totally out of the ballpark. And again, remember that it's not being eaten up by 3,000 middlemen. I saw a statistic that claimed, I have no idea with how much justification, that an artist can typically see about $1 on a sold album. I suspect this is actually pretty optimistic. It's good to think that the artist will see more than that, and I'm certainly tempted to buy the album regardless of what I may think about their music, whatever that is, and just to support this effort and just to show that it does work. Very interesting. Okay, I wanted to introduce you to three more webcomics. I did three a while back, and I assure you that I read far more than three, so I'll dole them out pieces at a time as they strike my attention. Now, as it happens, two of these three are ones I only very recently started reading, so that's part of the reason I bring them up. First one is Out There. Out There is a comedic soap opera of sorts. The characters are really surprisingly likable, if amusingly flawed, as of course they have to be for good comedy. They include a fascinating, mysterious main cast member named John. Now, John is picked up while not hitchhiking, while walking across the country at the start of the strip, and has some very, I don't know if zen is the right word, but maybe it is, outlook on life, a very fascinating philosophy, and his personality definitely offsets the somewhat strident behavior of some of the other main cast. Anyway, rather than try and describe it all to you, I'll encourage you to go read it. I dug through all the archives, as I am wont to do, and have caught up, and I recommend this one. New strips come out 6 times a week, which is phenomenal. Link is, of course, in the show notes. Second strip, and the most recent strip I started to read, is called Commissioned. Now, Commissioned, unlike Out There, which is actually telling these stories, Commissioned really doesn't tell much in the way of stories. There are occasional 2 or 3 part strip gags, but it's unrepentantly wacky, I think is how you could describe it. It caters largely to role-playing game fans, so there's quite a section of webcomics for that particular audience, and this is one. It's a bit niche in that respect, but it's very entertaining if you happen to get the jokes, which fortunately I do. It's very D&D-centric in its gaming catering, and it's very silly. It comes out 7 times a week, which is amazing. It's a full-color strip, and to have that come out that common and for that long, I believe there are several hundred strips of it now, so he's really doing quite a job there. After Strife is one that I've actually been reading since it very started, which hasn't been that tremendously long, but it's been a while. It's a fascinating, if rather slowly building sometimes, overall story, as opposed to the others being more strip-centric with arcs. This is actually taking a large story and breaking it into individual strips. Now, having said that, the creator does break them down very nicely into individual strips. There is a sense of beginning and closure to each strip, and that's good. His art style is somewhat unusual, I think you'll agree when you go look, but it does grow on you if it doesn't take you immediately. I was a bit put off at first, to be honest, but I quite like it now, and it's very appropriate to what he's doing. I really like this one. It's interesting to see where it goes. Now, it comes out only 2 times a week, but we have to understand the creator is, first of all, I believe has more webcomics than just this one, and again, is trying to tell a greater story. It's not just a little 3-panel thing or whatever.
Hey, if it's crud, don't bring it round here. You're listening to Sturgeon's Law.
So let me tell you a few things about the Final Fantasy game series. Now, Final Fantasy has always been a great joke in the gaming community. How can you have a Final Fantasy 12? Wasn't the first one final? Well, whatever. Now, this is a game series that started with, I think, the original Nintendo, and went through onto the SNES, and honestly, I don't go that far back in Nintendo. My Wii is my very first Nintendo machine, so I can't tell you a whole lot about that. What I can tell you is the game known as Final Fantasy VII was the first one to move to the Sony PlayStation platform. Now, that was the PlayStation 1 at that time, and that was the first one that I owned. Now, some of the earlier games have been ported over to the PlayStation and so forth, and I don't really have anything to say about that. So we'll start with Final Fantasy VII. Now, this game came out 10 years ago in 1997. It featured, I think for the first time, some pretty substantial cinematic cutscenes. And although during actual travel and fights, the figures were very, very cartoony, very chibi, as you might say. Nevertheless, it was not a lighthearted game. It was a very powerful game, sometimes a little puzzling to follow, to be sure, and occasionally a little silly in places that didn't seem appropriate. But for the large part, the game was very gripping. It certainly sold a ton of games, and I was way into it. The PlayStation 1, of course, was a CD-based game system, and so Final Fantasy VII was either 4 or 6 CDs, I forget which. It featured characters that are still beloved by a certain segment of fandom, Cloud Strife, Tifa, Aerith, Sephiroth, the bad guy, and so forth, and is quite a game if you can get your hands on it. Final Fantasy VIII came out 2 years later. The Final Fantasy VIII game attempted to be, I think, a little less cartoony and a little less silly. On the other hand, it somehow, to me, didn't have quite the heart and wasn't as memorable as Final Fantasy VII. The characters Squall, Leonhardt, Rinoa, Zell, I had to go look up the names because, except for Squall's first name, I had totally forgotten. Now, I played through at least the large portion of Final Fantasy VIII, but it really didn't stick with me as much. I haven't seen it build up as much of a fan base, and they haven't returned to it, which is a subject we'll talk about in a moment. The following year, 2000, brought Final Fantasy IX, which would be the last of the PlayStation 1 games. Final Fantasy IX was a retro-style game that went back more to the kinds of character classes and character looks from the earlier Final Fantasies, the Nintendo ones, although bringing them onto this platform. I don't have a whole lot to say about it because I actually never really played it. My wife played a bit of it, and when I purged all our PlayStation 1 games, I got rid of it before I had actually ever loaded it myself. So I can't tell you much here except for its existence. In the following year, 2001, they put out Final Fantasy X, the first PlayStation 2 Final Fantasy role-playing game. Final Fantasy X was much more cinematic, albeit sometimes a little dull, to be honest, and frequently mystifying as to where the story was going. The insertion of a mini-game, although it turned into more of a maxi-game, of a kind of underwater soccer thing was pretty perplexing. Nevertheless, Tidus, Yuna, Waka, generally interesting characters. This was also the first foray into voice acting for the Final Fantasy games, which had been text only for all of the dialogue, including cinematic dialogue, up to this point, to my recollection. The voice acting was not too bad in Final Fantasy X. It wasn't spectacular, but it was pretty good. Now, I haven't talked a whole lot about the way these games are played, what the play style is like. Let me touch on that briefly, because it's going to change after this. They are role-playing games. I'm not going to dig into what that means from a video game standpoint and hope that you find out on your own. They are turn-based, which is to say that you don't have to be frantic during combat. On the other hand, it can get a bit tedious because, you know, I want this character to attack that bad guy. I, you know, click on menus to do that, and I click on it again, and I click on it again. And so they could get to be a bit of button pushers in their own way, not spastically so like fight games might be, but nevertheless, kind of like Diablo, and even Diablo 2 to an extent, were a little tough on the carpal tunnel syndrome at times. As with role-playing games, of course, your objective is not only to pursue the story, but to build the characters up so that you would be prepared for the tougher challenges as the game went. I will say that Final Fantasy games are somewhat notorious, in my view, at least, for ramping up the difficulty surprisingly, and you wish you had done more to build your characters up earlier on. It pains to keep some save files. Okay, enough about the play details. I will say that all of these games, however, are really, to me, about pursuing the story. But you feel very involved in it. You don't feel like you're just being led through a story. Final Fantasy VII was pretty linear. They've tried harder as games went by to give you more control over where you go and what you do next to some point. But story needs being what they are, that only goes up to a point. Back to the games. Final Fantasy XI 2002 is a massively multiplayer online role-playing game, about which I know almost nothing more because I have never played it, not being generally a big fan of MMORPGs, not being possessed of deep pockets. Final Fantasy X-2, or X-2 if you like, came out in 2003. Now this is the first time that they had a Final Fantasy game that was a direct sequel to another Final Fantasy game. You may notice that each time I've talked about one, there have been different main characters, and I've talked about them differently, and they really haven't been sequels one to another up until this point. This is why instead of calling it 12 or whatever, they called it 10-2. Unfortunately, once again, I haven't played 10-2 yet, but I may well do so in the future because I have played but not finished Final Fantasy X and still own it. Now, there was a skip before Final Fantasy XII. 2006 is when this game came out, and it's a bit of a departure from the earlier playstyle, which is why I wanted to tell you about that first. This one doesn't require you necessarily to keep clicking to keep fighting, but on the other hand, while you're in the combat menus, the game is stopped. If you've ever played Baldur's Gate for the PC or a game like that, you'll be familiar with the idea to an extent. I think it's a little easier to deal with in Final Fantasy XII. I find it very smooth. It has a concept of gambits, where you can actually set up almost a little program, a little script, for each of the characters to run through. For instance, I might have a character who their first gambit is to look and see if any of their teammates, including themselves, are under 40% hit points, and if so, cast a cure spell on them. Their second gambit might be to attack whatever enemy that the party leader has targeted. And then they might have another gambit to do something else. And the whole point is it goes them in an order until it finds one that actually matches something they can reasonably do, and then they do it. and you can be hands-off about it. At the same time, as I say, if you pull up the combat menu, the play stops and you're able to give instructions to override the gambits. This is a very cool system. It allows you to not have to jam on the buttons quite so much to get things done, but you still have a full control over how your party interacts with the enemy. Very nice. I'm in the middle playing Final Fantasy XII right now, and so I'm really taken with it. It's extremely cinematic. For the first time ever, you don't have invisible wandering monsters that jump on you while you're walking around. You can see what's out there, and you can choose to try and avoid it if you like. As well, in previous Final Fantasy games, when you got into combat, the surroundings would go away and you kind of have a little arena almost kind of screen that was somewhat related to the terrain you were on or whatever, and you would fight there, and then after that was over you would go back to, you know, your actual map that you were walking around on or whatever. Not so in Final Fantasy XII, where it's all just a part of kind of the ongoing movie. Very nice, very smooth style. The characters such as Van, the sky pirate Balthair, and his kind of bunny woman sidekick Fran, the fallen knight Dash, all very interesting and entertaining characters. The voice acting is quite good. This is a good wrap to 10 years of Final Fantasy. Now, I will say there is also a Final Fantasy XII sequel that is on the Nintendo DS. Now, it's not out quite yet in America, but it's supposed to be in this quarter. So I'm looking forward to that, since I'm also kind of eyeing the Nintendo DS Lite as something to possibly get. But that will probably be about it for me, because Final Fantasy XIII will be a PlayStation 3 game, at which point Final Fantasy IX must finally part ways. Oh, I should also mention that last year as well, a sequel to Final Fantasy VII came out. Now, this was interesting in that it's an action game, as I understand it, not the same kind of role-playing game. So that's interesting. I think I read it as a third-person shooter. I haven't played it. So that's the Final Fantasy series, or at least the last half of it. I just wanted to kind of lead you through the last 10 years of these and say that, in general, they're very good games. They're extremely long. If you're ever frustrated by short gameplay, you buy a game and you get 6 hours out of it, you will not have this problem. Final Fantasy VII seemed to average about 100 hours for most people. That's right, 100 hours. And most of the other games have been very similar in that regard. Okay, wow, I've been talking a long time, so let's do a couple of pieces of mail and then wrap up with some music and be out of here. I got mail from Charles Cadenhead, who said, "Random, you sounded great. Keep ditching the script. You sound more relaxed and personable. I really enjoyed the show, and congrats on the Podcast Ready contest." Charles. Thanks, Charles. Once again, I'm without a script. I have somewhat better notes in front of me this time, although not good enough to have actually known a couple of things I would have liked to have. But, yeah, thanks for the comments. Here's voicemail from Chris Daly, who talks about the same thing a bit and also gives me a piece of advice.
Hey, Random. Chris Daly here, and I just heard the Without a Net episode of Sturgeon's Law, and the crowd went wild. Okay, it was just me, but I'm sure the other people went wild too. They're just not here in my recording studio. Anyway, yeah, it was a good show. And I wanted to say, as far as the voicemail, I use another online company called Private Phone. I think Net Zero makes it. I think it's at privatephone.com. The sound quality is a lot better. You can pick any area code you want. Very cool stuff. All right, you keep turning out the good shows, and I'll keep listening. Keep it real, man.
So thanks there too for your comments, Chris. And about Private Phone, I'll definitely keep it in mind. I've eyed the site a couple of times. I'm still not positive that I just want to have a phone number. I don't know. Let me know what you think. Let me know if it's something that you miss. If it's not, then I'm not going to worry about it. I will say that I've occasionally contemplated just giving you my my Grand Central number. And if you don't know about Grand Central, you can check that out. And since I go straight to voicemail for unknown numbers with that, doing it that way. But, you know, anyway, let me know what you think. Real quick, some music, and then we will be out of here. Last time I promised you that I would play the Thomas Dolby track that I deferred last time. So this is Thomas Dolby from the PodSafe Music Network with, of all things, a very, very good jazz piece, The Key to Her Ferrari. Thank you. Once again, that was Thomas Dolby with The Key to Her Ferrari off of the Podsafe Music Network.
This podcast is certified fresh.
Freshmediaworks.com.
And that's it for show number 78. Thanks for sticking with me. Didn't quite mean to talk quite so long, much like I didn't last time, so we'll see how that goes, and maybe I'll get more used to this, and maybe I'll be less ambitious with the number of things I want to cover. We'll just see how it turns out. Once again, thanks for being a part of it by being a listener. Feel free to email me at sturgeonslaw@gmail.com and interact that way. Check out the website at www.sturgeonslaw.com, where you'll see the show notes with links to everything that I've talked about, and all sorts of other neat stuff, I'm sure. Until next time, then, and I will catch you later.
This is a different thing. It's spontaneous, and it's called wit.